Hello and welcome to another episode of Sons of Ignatius podcast. I am Father Niall Leahy and I'm joined by another remarkable person today. In the absence of Father David Lugo, David, you're still missed and all I want for Christmas is you. No, seriously, Dave, looking forward to you coming back onto the podcast. But in your absence, I have been joined by a number of really remarkable guests for the last couple of episodes, and I'm glad to say that there's another good man of the church, follower of Jesus, with me today. His name is Mr. Tony Foy, a Donegal man, no less. Tony, welcome to the podcast, Sons of Ignatius, and would you mind just introducing yourself for our listeners?
Sure, Father Niall, thank you so much for having me on. My name's Tony Foy. I am married to Sheena. We have 7 children, 2 are married, another engaged, and in steps of stairs down from 25 to 13 years of age. And I got involved with NET whenever missionaries started to come around Donegal, and we just liked the sound of them. We liked the look of them. They were just good fun, good crack, and for purely aesthetic, surfacey reasons, we liked them. Something on a spiritual level that we liked about them was that they were able to communicate the faith in a way that we were not. And so I suppose to succinctly describe the difference between their theology and our theology was that they were able to communicate who it was that they stood for, whereas we as Catholics in Ireland very much communicated what we stood against. In other words, the neuralgic issues and what we were doing about them and all that sort of thing. So we were getting caught up in the culture wars. And these young internationals, Australia, Canada, America, they were past that very much. And it's not that these things weren't important, but they weren't the most important thing. And the most important thing was the most important person, that was Jesus. And they were able to communicate their love for him and his love for them in a way that was really cool.
So Tony, you are now the executive director of NET Ministries in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And that means you're basically looking after this organization and all these young people who are coming to Ireland, or there's a mixture of Irish and non-Irish, to be on mission. And that's really why you're on the podcast, on this podcast, Tony, is because this podcast is about mission. It's about the mission of the church. We sort of assume that our listeners are believers, and we want to respond to Pope Francis's call here, which is for believers to be missionary disciples, that Jesus does not call anyone to himself without also giving them a mission.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, how do you find being the director of a missionary organization? You're not just looking after a lot of believers, you're looking after a lot of missionaries and young missionaries at that. How do you find that?
Gosh, that's such a broad question and a good one at the same time. How do I find it? I find it incredibly challenging. I find it that since I got involved with NET, I was involved in business before that. I'm a chartered accountant as well. And
snap.
Are you an accountant?
Yeah, I trained. I did my time in KPMG. Yeah,
wow, yeah. That's crazy.
Finished there in 2008.
That is nuts. I think it was, 1992 I finished, so it was 92, 93 I qualified, but it was...
It comes in handy, Tony, doesn't it?
It does, actually. I do the accounts for NET, which is really helpful. But anyway, so I bring that, as I'm sure you bring your accountancy. It's not so much the qualification, but the skill set and the mindset, the analytical mind that it actually gives you. And, you know, let's talk about that specifically. How does that help me in my job with NET? It's a case of what's working, what's not working.
Mm.
Do the thing that's working. Don't do the thing that's not working. Do more of the stuff that's working. For me, you know, being Catholic, it's so what's working? And I suppose this leads on very much to the subject of the podcast.
Yeah, so the title of our episode today is O Come Let Us Adore. And that's because it's Christmas, and that's one of the lines from that incredible song, O Holy Night, and the night when Christ was born. Sorry, what am I saying? That's a line from O Come All Ye Faithful.
Adeste
Fidelis. Not, oh God, that sounded wrong in my head. And yeah, excuse me. So, O Come Let Us Adore, that's one of those great lines from the Christmas hymn, O Come All Ye Faithful, Adeste Fidelis. But it also relates to the practice of Eucharistic adoration. that one of the ways that Catholics adore Christ is in the Eucharist during Eucharistic adoration. And Tony, I suppose the first time I really met you and came across you was at a youth retreat in Clongowes Wood College in Kildare. And I thought you said something pretty ballsy, to be honest, and courageous. You said to a room full of priests and even a bishop that Mass is no longer the church's tool of evangelization, that it's not really designed to get new people in, and that we have to move beyond that. Would you mind just going back to that and maybe saying something more about that opinion and conviction?
Yeah, so it's something that I heard Bishop Robert Barron say years ago, and because he said it, I felt I had the freedom to say it as well. And it resonated with me in my personal life, but also in the life of the church and what I see in the parishes and so on and so forth. And the parishes that we actually work in, I see it also in the life of the missionaries when we take them from somebody who's pretty raw, who has strong faith but wants to go on mission. And they come to Ireland and I don't want to say we manage their faith journey, but we do try and help them go deeper in their love for Jesus so that they can actually share something of worth with young people that they're actually reaching. So what did Bishop Robert Barron say? He said, you know, we have to recognize that in the church of today, that people are not having conversions at Mass. You know, and that's the big thing, all right? And it depends on our mindset. What does the church exist for? What was their purpose? And that bishop who was there that day, he told me that Pope Francis's favorite encyclical is Pope Paul VI's Evangelii Nuntiandi, and that's where he says that it is their deepest identity to evangelize, to be on mission.
That's funny that you should bring that encyclical up, because that's how this podcast started, actually, Tony. Father Dave and I, we did a number of episodes just going through Evangelii Nuntiandi, talking about the church's mission, and yeah, here you are talking about it again. So anyway, note to our listeners, if you want to go back to the start, that's what you're going to get a few episodes on that. Sorry, Tony. Yeah, yes. Keep going.
Yeah, it's a beautiful document, and it's lovely that the Pope has referenced that and said it's his favorite encyclical. And I would recommend, if you guys have done the podcast on that, to go back and listen to it, because there's really deep stuff and it helps to reorient us and so on and so forth. But anyway, what did Bishop Barron say? That people are not having conversions at Mass. We have to recognize that that is the case and it's not happening. Did it ever happen? I don't know, because I wasn't alive back then, but certainly in my experience, that is the case. People are not having conversions at Mass. So where are they having conversions? Now, the Americans are brilliant at data. They mine the data and figure out, you know, they have all sorts of exit polls, entrance polls, all that sort of thing. Where are people having conversions? They're having conversions in adoration and in other ministries that are running parallel with the church that lead to a point where people can have the opportunity of conversion. So basically, it's not that the ministries themselves are the point of conversion. It's the fact that they lead to an openness for Jesus to come into a person's life and have conversion. But the thing that we're here to talk about today, and that I would like to confirm in what Bishop Robert Barron said, is adoration is where it's at.
So, you know, in this parish here on Gardiner Street, we haven't mined the data, okay? We don't have a master plan here that has put Eucharistic adoration at the center of our missionary strategy or anything like that. But it just so happens that over the last number of months, Eucharistic adoration is now offered here every Friday and Saturday, especially Friday evenings. And we're also offering it to children, the school children who are preparing for communion and confirmation. And yeah, like without it being a master plan, this just seems to have emerged in the life of our parish that people are really having good experiences, feel close to God when they're in adoration, and the children like it. And yeah, when I put my accountant mindset on, I would say, yeah, this is working. You know, when we look at our Mass numbers, and thankfully some of our Masses are still well attended, but others are declining. And there does seem to be a thirst for adoration. And why is that, Tony? Like, what is it that makes adoration so appealing to people today when they might be a little bit put off by Mass? What's going on there?
First off, let's say what we're not saying. What we're not saying is that the Mass isn't important. And what we're not saying is that Jesus isn't truly present when Father Niall holds up the host. We're not saying that the Mass isn't the Mass. The Mass is the source and summit of our faith. The challenge is that people on the ground are not even facing the mountain. They don't have their hiking boots on. They don't have their mountain climbing gear on. And they're not even facing the mountain. And we have to recognize that they've got their track gear on. They've got their leotards on. They don't have the heavy duty warm weather stuff that you need to climb a mountain. They're facing in the opposite direction. But at the same time, they don't need their heavy-duty mountain gear to actually go to adoration. And when invited and when gently hinted at that, you know, there's something special here, you know, not even to say to them that Jesus is truly present in adoration, but that they will feel something different when coming to adoration, because for some reason the biases that might be there for Mass are no longer there for adoration. You know, they're just like, here I am in this nice warm chapel, and it's quiet.
There's something about the unstructured nature, I think, of Eucharistic adoration, where maybe there might be some nice quiet music in the background or a few reflections being offered. But, you know, to use St. John Henry Newman's dictum, heart speaks to heart, I think adoration is a time when you can really talk to God in your own words and say what you want to say to God and to Jesus, and to be just real in that. Like, when you look at all of Jesus' encounters in the Gospels, people weren't sort of rehearsing learnt off lines to him. They were speaking as one person speaks to another, or as St. Ignatius would say, as one friend speaks to another. And yeah, I think Eucharistic adoration really facilitates that, that heart to heart.
And we don't need a whole lot of theology, even though it's a deeply theological concept, to believe that Jesus is truly present in this little piece of bread. For some reason, we don't need a whole lot of theology. It's so ridiculous to think that the Lord of the universe, who holds us in existence, is actually present, body, blood, soul, and divinity in this little piece of bread, that we don't actually go there. And somehow we're able to actually, because of that, I'm not even going to allow my head to think about it. It's so beyond what I can comprehend intellectually through my mind that I'm not even going to go there, because it's so ridiculous. Therefore, somehow I am open, you know?
Yeah, it says so much about God that I remember preaching at a youth retreat and kind of saying, we have this ingrained into our minds that, oh, you know, on a Sunday morning, I have to make this huge effort to go to Mass or get myself up and out, and as if encountering God is difficult, when in fact it's God who's done all the work. God couldn't be making himself more available, so much so being present in a small piece of bread so that we can ingest him. It's like, how much easier could it be? This is very much pre-packaged. Don't have to climb a mountain, just show up and receive. The Eucharist does make God sort of radically available.
I don't know if you've ever heard of a book called Letters to a Brother Priest. It's from one Filipino priest to another older Filipino priest who was basically helping him. And he was a seminarian, and he was helping him in his faith journey and preparation for the priesthood. And the letters are absolutely incredible. And he made it into a book. It's a fairly thin book, but that played a big part in my own story of faith as a teenager. My dad, he came to faith, a strong faith, through a thing called Marriage Encounter. It wasn't for people with marriage problems, it was for people who wanted to have a strong marriage. And himself and my mom came back from that weekend. He started telling us he loved us. And that, from an Irish father who hadn't been told himself that his dad loved him, and or his mom died when he was young, so he didn't have a great example of, you know, how to be affectionate towards his kids. But he came back from this weekend telling us that he loved us, and it was clear that something had happened in his life. And as time went on, it didn't dissipate. He became stronger in his faith, and he used to go to adoration, and he'd invite us along as kids to go, and I just wanted to be with him. None of the rest of them came, but I wanted to be with them, and I'd go along to adoration, and there I'd encountered that book, and it was just fabulous, and it really explained in very simple terms what was actually happening in adoration, that I was actually in the presence of, like, I enjoyed the time there before I understood, okay? And it's not to say that my human brain can intellectually comprehend Jesus being present there, but it helped me in simple terms understand what God's love, how immense it is that he would take the form of bread in order to be present to me, to make himself present to me in a way that is more profound than, you know, you and I are together in this room. We're doing a podcast. He said, where two or more that are gathered together in his name, he is there present in the midst of us. The presence that is in the Eucharist is different. For some reason, it is different. It's a gift to us in the church, and it's real. It's really powerful. I don't go to adoration and sit there for an hour and put the time in that I don't have an encounter with him, that I don't experience peace beyond all understanding. And it was one of the gifts that I gave to my kids in faith, that I would bring them to adoration so that they in turn themselves, they don't go to adoration often, but they have that. It's a bit like I was brought up in a house that wasn't, we weren't, you know, you talked to me about Finn Harps. I've been to two Finn Harps matches and I'm from Belle Buffet. So when I go there, it's something that I'm not used to and I'm uncomfortable. And it's the same, we have to recognize that that discomfort is there for those people who haven't an experience of the church. So they walk into a church, that discomfort that I experience when I go to a Finn Harps match is there for folks who are first time coming across the door, they don't know what to do. And again, adoration does away with all that because you just sit, you know, and you just sit there and like, that's simple. It's not complicated. And so you can't do wrong. And I suppose the point I'm making is that my kids have faith, thanks be to God. And it's not because I'm fantastic or Sheena's fantastic, even though she is. The point is that they were surrounded by young missionaries and they wanted to be like them because they were cool and they were good fun, a bit of crack. And they also had faith, you know, and whatever. Long story short, they're in their faith, they're active in their faith, they married in their faith and so on. And back to adoration, it was one of the things I was very intentional about as a father, was to do for my kids what my dad did for me, which is to bring me to adoration and let Jesus do the rest. Because, you know, we have to, it sounds very cliched, but if we recognize that Jesus is truly present in the Eucharist, we don't have to do a whole lot other than bring people there.
That's beautiful, by the way, that your father brought you to adoration and now you're bringing your kids, or you've introduced your kids to adoration. That's a beautiful way of passing on the faith and the practice of the faith. Just to talk a little bit about the work of the NET team here and how they are bringing people to Jesus in the Eucharist. On a Friday evening, now we have Mass at 7 p.m. and then we enter into an hour of adoration, which we're calling Friday Night Candlelight. So basically the NET team, NET volunteers are out on the street with candles, a little basket of little candles, invite people to come into the church and to light a candle and to pray. They'll come up the front and they'll place their candle right in front of Jesus in the Eucharist. Take a moment and, you know, more often than not, I would say, they then stay. They stay in the church for a while to pray. And there's just beautiful stories of people saying, God, I was having a really hard day, or it seemed to be one thing after another. And then all of a sudden, you invited me into your church. And the last, whatever, 20 minutes, 30 minutes has been really beautiful. So thank you. Or other people, you know, again, it's even more profound than that, or more striking to say, no, I think something happened for me tonight. Yeah. And it's, I often think, like, when people are finding it hard to put words on what they've experienced, you know, something very real has happened. Yeah. And that's what I'm seeing as people are leaving the church. I'm saying, so how was that? And they're like, yeah. And I think, okay, great. I'm delighted you can't find the words for it, because it says something about the level at which it happened.
And it cuts away from all the BS, you know, for want of a better way. And I don't know if you're allowed to say cuss words on this podcast, but it's very simple. Being Catholic is actually really simple. We complicate it. Like, it's a love story. God and his people, God and me, God and Niall. And like, he holds us in the palm of his hand. And, you know, his love is so profound for us that he's willing to die for us so that we can live in eternity with him. But to help us on our journey, he comes in the form of bread and wine, and so humble that we can disrespect him. We have the freedom to disrespect him or ignore him.
Are you seeing this happening with other NET teams, Tony?
Absolutely. One of the ministry tools that we train the netters in is in night fever, light fever, we call it, which is basically your Friday night candlelight, essentially. And that's something that we try and get the parish that we're working in to actually do in conjunction with the NET team. Also adoration. It wouldn't be appropriate to bring teens to adoration every week because, you know, there's potential for them to get bored. But it's an opportunity for us to introduce them to adoration and to hope that they'll go of their own volition, you know, in their own steam, in their own time. But it's just to introduce them. And also to contextualize what's actually going on there so that they understand that this is who it is, this is who he is, and no biggie, you know, it's just God.
It's, I like what you say there about no biggie, because my sense of the faith is that, you know, to talk about the place of faith in your life or your relationship with God, in one way, it's like the most important thing. It's who you are. We are sons and daughters of God, and that's to be who you are will then be who, you know, to be who you're made to be a son or daughter of God and be in relationship with your Heavenly Father. So it's a really big deal. But in another way, it's just not a big deal at all. Like, it's just normal. It's like oxygen. You know, in the same way, oxygen is incredibly important. And if it's not there, we're in trouble. But when it is there, it couldn't be more natural. It couldn't be more normal. And you don't need to make a big deal out of the fact that we're breathing oxygen in and out every day. It's just what we do. And if I were to look back with slightly rose-tinted glasses, you know, on Ireland when faith was stronger here, I would say, yeah, it was probably really important. And another way, it wasn't that big of a deal at all. It's just what you did.
What you did, yeah. And I think, you know, I don't want to harp on about this, but I say it to the missionaries all the time, in that you're going to be led to believe that the faith that was in Ireland was an aberration. It wasn't real, that it was very corrupt, and that it was something that the church dominated the population and so on and so forth. And, you know, I don't want to get into that. But my experience, and I'm old enough to remember, I'm a good bit older than you, Father Niall, my experience was the opposite of that growing up, that it was actually a really good place to live. You know, sure, everybody went to Mass, and they went to Mass because there was a simplicity and a deep sense that this was important. Mm-hmm. And there was a cultural pressure there, sure enough, to go. You're a bit of an idiot if you didn't go to Mass, there was something wrong with you, you know. But it wasn't to say that what you experienced when you got there was a bad thing. What you experienced when you got there was a good thing. And it actually impacted on the culture in a very, very positive way. And you'd need a PhD to argue the opposite of what I'm about to say. But whenever we were kids, or when I was a kid, our crime rate was a third of what an indictable crime, serious crime, was a third of what it is now. Church attendance is a third now of what it was then. And, you know, there has to be some sort of relationship between those two bits of data in terms of practice of faith is good for a population. And our Catholic faith, if we believe it to be true, is we have the deposit of truth. Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And he chose the Catholic Church as his vehicle to actually, you know, the mystical body of Christ. Anyway, I'm getting into too much theology, and you're the one to steer me in.
You know, to back you up, Tony, if you're to basically say that practice of faith isn't a good thing or isn't good for a country or society, you'd be saying then that Jesus had it all wrong.
Yeah.
And, well, okay, if you want to say that. But no, I think Jesus spoke the truth, and he wouldn't be encouraging us to believe and to practice if that weren't the best thing we could possibly do.
And I also think from a secular perspective that the data bears that out, you know, and you have people like Jordan Peterson, as an example, who is actually creating a very wide on-ramp to the faith. He may not have a relationship with Jesus himself, but he's come to the conclusion through data and through practice, through being a psychologist, that being faithful is actually good for a person. It's important to distinguish between which religion you're faithful to. He has a particular proclivity towards Christianity and seems to lean into Catholicism. And that's from a purely analytical mind, based on clinical experience, as well as analyzing data. And, you know, there's something about this, not just from a religious perspective, but from a secular conceptual perspective, that is good for a person, it's good for a family, it's good for society.
And I would say, if, you know, if we wanted to make a distinction between the good and the bad of old Catholic Ireland, you have to make the distinction between people of faith and people who really practice their faith, and then people who, let's say, embraced some kind of religiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, often that was the priests as well. You know, I mean, that's when I would say the, you know, whatever kind of rot set in, it was through the corruption of the religion itself. And a falling tree will make so much more noise than, you know, 100 trees growing quietly. And yeah, there were some big trees that fell. But yeah, let's remember too, as we're looking back, that there was genuine faith there and people who had a real connection with God. And it was both incredibly important and just incredibly normal. It was just the air they breathed.
So how we did life, and, you know, the happiness indexes, and I don't know if you looked at any of those. I haven't, but I don't know, are we any happier now that we've got all this stuff and no faith than whenever we had faith and less stuff? I grew up very happy, I have to say, and we had very little. Yeah. We weren't poor or impoverished by any manner of means, but, you know, I don't think many people had much.
Well, you know, it's one thing I've noticed about the NET team here is that they have very limited access to their mobile phones. And that means that they make their own fun and with each other. And there is something about the sort of less stuff you have to love and adore, well, then the more you sort of love people and God. And there's a lot of people out there now trying to declutter and to minimize and all that. And yeah, and maybe that's a nice message for us to end on, given that this episode will be released just in time for Christmas, is that to make the focus of Christmas Christ, God, the people in your life and the people who need you, rather than the stuff. Because if the stuff starts taking up too much space, well, then don't be surprised if the importance of people and God in your life starts to diminish. So we're in danger of Christmas becoming kind of a consumer festival rather than a religious festival. And yeah, a little bit of less is more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree completely. If we're getting rid of stuff, get rid of the stuff. But it'll be filled with some other tiny distortion or big distortion or whatever, unless we fill it with God. For our hearts are restless until they rest in thee, O God. St. Augustine. We're meant for God. You know, it's the only way we're going to be truly happy is to actually have him in our lives.
Say a prayer this Christmas.
Amen.
Tony, thanks for coming on the podcast. Thanks for visiting us here in Gardiner Street. And thanks for the immense and blessed work that you're doing with NET Ministries in Ireland. And God bless you and your wonderful wife, Sheena, all your children and even the grandchildren that are on the way. May it all be blessed for you, Tony.
Thanks, Father Niall, and you keep up the good work here that you're doing.
Thank you. Take care, everyone. God bless. Thank you.